Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the Basketball Fiends, brought to you by the RS Gina Podcast Network. And with me, as always, because, you know, he's my co-host, is Jesus Acevedo Jr. Jesus, how's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. I can't complain, you know. It's one day before my 30th birthday. So I'm happy to have got this far so far in the game we call life, you know, the 30th level, you know. So each level gets a little bit more difficult to get to, you know. There's a lot of stages to get through, you know. Climate change, I can kind of see it. So that's going to be a tough level coming up, you know. but feeling good. Happy that we still have playoff basketball. You know, it feels weird. We're like almost mid-June and we still have playoff basketball when typically this is like NBA finals time, sort of, right? So it feels weird. And I know they just released the schedule for next season, the potential schedule, not the game schedule, but like when the finals will start, trade deadline and all that.
Kind of like the time frame type of deal.
Exactly, yeah. But we're still deep into this playoff season. We're in the semifinals of each conference, and we got some good games. But before we get to those games and a couple of the series we're going to talk about, let's talk about some award winners, Alex.
Yes, sir. And I think the biggest award winner that was just announced was Nikola Jokic, who won MVP. First center to win it since Shaq, man. The centers are back.
Now, I will say, you know, Zach Lowe, he was on the jump recently, and they asked him, I think Rachel Nichols said, you know, does this mean that centers are back? And I'll say what he said. He said, centers never left, really. You know, there was just some, you know, there were still teams, you know, using traditional centers. It was just that for the past couple of championships, there hasn't been a traditional center. You know, Draymond Green, Chris Bosh, you know, players of that. You know, Kevin Love played center at times. So it wasn't like, you know, it was just because these teams didn't have a center that had those skills. You know, now we actually have a lot of good centers in the NBA right now.
Yeah, man, you got Jokic, of course. You got Joel Embiid. You got Rudy Gobert.
Who it has to be said about Joel, had he not got hurt, we could easily be talking about co-MVPs this season.
Yeah. Honestly.
He was having that kind of season.
Yeah, he was. I'm curious, has there ever been co-MVPs before?
Well, that's a good... I know we've had co-Rookie of the Year.
Right.
Grant Hill and Jason Kidd is the last that I can remember. But
right. I don't think there's been co-MVPs, but I'm curious if... it, like you said, if Embiid hadn't gotten hurt, him and Jokic might have been... might have had to share that honor. And it could have made sense, like one's east, one's west, so.
True.
Maybe.
Now, look, you know, but Jokic, he earned it. You know, he played, he was the most consistent throughout the whole season. He's the lowest drafted player to ever win the award. He was the 44th pick in the 2014 NBA draft. And I look back at that draft now. Wow. Jokic is clearly the best player from that draft. That's the Andrew Wiggins draft. Zach LaVine was in that draft. So it's a draft that makes you look back and be like, wow, how did teams pass on Jokic? You know, and I recommend people to go read this story on The Athletic by Sam Vecenie, the great Sam Vecenie. Granted, I don't know him, so I'm assuming that he's great. But he has this article where he tracks how Denver came upon Jokic. And one of the quotes that stood out to me speaks about the player Jokic is. This is from Denver president of basketball operations, Tim Connolly. He said, they say the best baseball hitters like Ted Williams can see the seams of a baseball. I think he, Nikola, processes things that quickly but is able to play at his own speed. He's almost like an algorithm. He sees it, mental snapshot, he's able to do it. He never gets sped up, and he's almost never out of options. Most guys, first move, second move, by the time they hit the third move, they're falling over and they have no outs. Every time he catches the ball, he has like 15 outs. So yeah, it was a long quote, but it speaks to the kind of player he is. And when you see him play, you see it. You see that exact quote.
I see it. Dogs agree as well. But I like that analogy that he brings up about the algorithm. It's kind of like you never see any panic in his game. He always seems composed, in control. I mean, of course, he'll have a turnover here and there. I mean, that's always bound to happen. But just like there's always options there, you know, he's got plan A, B, C, and D. Just it feels like, you know, instantaneously once he gets the ball. So I like that. Like, he's an algorithm. He's got algorithm mindset.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny. I don't know if it was last season or two seasons ago. I think somebody, a reporter, asked him, you know, when you're out there playing, it seems like you're moving in slow motion, but everything's in control. You know, how do you do that? And he said, it's just because I'm not fast. he was just like,
I mean, he's honest.
He's honest, you know. But very well deserved by Nikola Jokic, the third European ever to win the MVP. Pop quiz, who were the other two Europeans to win it? Go.
Ooh, Dirk.
Yeah.
It was, you said two?
Two.
Oh my God, this is going to bug me. I know it's Dirk. Oh, this is going to piss me off. And you said European, right?
Five.
Dang.
Four. Three.
Oh, I'm stuck.
Two.
I'm stuck. Who was it?
One.
I don't know.
The Greek freak.
Pissed. Oh, my God.
The Greek freak. He just won it.
I know. Oh, my God. My geography's terrible. I don't know why I freaking forgot about Giannis.
But, yeah, so, look, Nikola earned it, and he had a hell of a season, you know. So, it's definitely now – I wonder if teams start – evaluating European players different, you know, because let's be honest, European players come with a different skill set. It's often been said that Europeans are more skillful than even some of the American players. So it's definitely going to be interesting. But another European that won an award recently, the Defensive Player of the Year went to Rudy Gobert, his third Defensive Player of the Year award. And look, I got this one wrong for my early season prediction. I thought Ben Simmons was going to carry it on and be the, you know, next wing player to win Defensive Player of the Year. But, you know, Rudy Gobert was consistent the whole season, playing on the best team in the league.
Yeah, man, he was doing his thing. I want to say, did I say Rudy?
I think you did say Rudy. Yeah, I think you. Right? Okay. I think you liked Ben Simmons, you said, but you said Rudy. Just, I don't remember what you said.
Yeah. Okay, no. I do remember. I remember there was. I felt like Rudy Gobert. There was more consistency there with, as opposed to Ben Simmons. I think this was the first year where we really saw Ben Simmons's defensive talents really come to light in previous years. So I think that's where I kind of rolled with Rudy Gobert, but. I mean, I want to say Ben Simmons slowed down, you know, at the midway point of the season. Like, had that been consistent throughout the season, then I wouldn't have been mad if he had picked it up.
Exactly. And look, Gobert showed why he's Defensive Player of the Year. You know, you can go back to game one of the Utah Jazz versus the LA Clippers. He got the game-winning block. And this is from NBA.com and the NBA Advanced Stats. Gobert ranked second in the NBA in defensive win shares, which measures a player's defensive impact on winning. He defended the most field goal attempts at the rim in the NBA, 549, and held opponents to 50% shooting on those shots, the third lowest mark among the 27 players who defended at least 300 shots at the rim this season. So the man can defend, pretty much, Alex. That's what all those stats say.
Yeah, man. He knows how to do his job, and he's part of the main reason why the Utah Jazz are number one in the West, rightfully so. And I'm curious. So, who, real quick, just to touch on Coach of the Year, because it was announced. Who did you have as Coach of the Year, real quick?
You know me. I love defense. That's one thing I've told you. I love defense, so that's why it's funny going from the Defensive Player of the Year award now to the Coach of the Year award, which was the New York Knicks, Tom Thibodeau. You know, and I think rightfully so, he deserved it. I could definitely make an argument for Monty Williams, definitely. But I think Tom Thibodeau, you know, he pretty much raised the Knicks from the dead. Let's be honest. Yeah. They were like in the NBA cemetery, like zombies just there, you know, and Tom's like, I got you guys. I got it. You know, let's go. And him and Julius Randle and the whole team bought in to what Tom Thibodeau does. And I mean, you've experienced that, you know, being in Chicago, you know how he can transform a team and his hard-nosed grind defense that he instills within the team. And it's just, you know, you saw that. They were the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference, so well deserved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know I was a Monty Williams guy, but I'm definitely not mad at Tibbs winning another Coach of the Year honor. Like you said, he raised the Knicks from the dead, just forced them into relevance again as a respectable team in the league now with Julius Randle and company. So, I mean, for years, the Knicks have sort of just been kind of a punchline as far as jokes in the NBA. So, you know, definitely well deserved. But some of the men that we're going to discuss in this next topic are some coaching changes that have occurred in the league. And I mean, so there's some moving pieces around. You got Terry Stotts moving on from Portland. You got Steve Clifford, who also parted ways with the Magic. Of course, we know what went down with the Celtics and Brad Stevens. But you know what? I want to start off with Nate. I should have practiced this. I should have practiced this last name more than I did. Nate Bjorkgren.
Bjorkson. We'll go with that.
Bjorkson. We're probably butchering it. Sorry, but he is out at Indiana after, I believe, 1 year.
Which, that was interesting. I always find it interesting when coaches fire a team from any league after one season. You know, and to me, that most often than not speaks to a fit. You know, he was just wasn't a fit. Because, look, they did sort of well. You know, they had to manage some injuries, and they won a tournament. They won a game in the playing tournament. They were one win away from making the actual playoffs. But from the reports I saw, everything seemed to be that he didn't build that relationship with the players, and there was friction. So it goes back to what I'm saying. It just wasn't a good fit.
Yeah, and I think it's very apparent now in today's NBA about player-coach relationships. Like, I think it's very apparent now that, you know, if your coach, you know, doesn't have that player-first mindset where he doesn't, you know, get along with the team, you know, it's just not going to work. You're not going to have that, I guess, I don't know, old-school, hard-nosed coach where he can, you know, go off on players, you know, during timeouts, get in your face. Like, players just aren't going to put up with that kind of stuff, you know, anymore in today's league. So even though it's like, yeah, it was 1 year, you would like to see, you know, a coach, you know, have some time to develop with their team. You know, it's just not really the case anymore, especially when within your first year, you're already sort of bumping heads with players and not, you know, having full, as they say, control of the locker room, whatever you want to call it. Not that I'm saying he's lost full control of the locker room.
Well, he's not coming back, so maybe he did. And yeah. Staying in the Eastern Conference, we'll talk a bit about the Magic because I think this might be the first time we ever talk about the Orlando Magic on the Basketball Fiends. But that surprised me. You know, Steve Clifford, I think he just finished his third season. The previous two seasons, they have been in the playoffs, I believe. So that came a bit of a surprise to me. I think there were maybe, I thought perhaps they might give him one more season. But, you know, the Orlando Magic are a young team. I like Steve Clifford as a fan. I know he did some okay things with the Charlotte Bobcats. You know, he might find himself an assistant coach position, but Orlando Magic, it's not as an attractive market as some of the other open coaching vacancies you mentioned. You know, there's Boston, you have Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, even with the Pacers, is, you know, you have more, well, not, I guess Pacers and Magic are a bit the same, I guess talent wise but you know, the most intriguing one for any coach should be the Portland Trailblazers for the sole fact that you have Dame Lillard, and which, that's an interesting situation because Dame is 31, I want to say. So this head coach has to hit it out of the park because we're maybe a season or two away from Dame Lillard saying, hey, I want out. I need to go to a contender, a la James Harden. So it's definitely the most intriguing. Now, I will say this. I love to see some new blood in these head coaching vacancies, not the same old coaches. Like, we know, we're hearing Mike D'Antoni to the Portland Trailblazers. Look, the Blazers had no trouble scoring. They don't need Mike D'Antoni. It'll be fun to watch Dame Lillard in a D'Antoni offense. Don't mind that. But the offense isn't the issue. But when I say new blood, I'm thinking about Chauncey Billups, Sam Cassell, Becky Hammon. I was going to throw Juwan Howard, but I just saw this report where Juwan Howard has repeatedly told NBA teams that he's not leaving Michigan. So mad respect to Juwan Howard. He's building something there in Michigan. And I don't think he leaves until they win a title. He wants to bring a title to Michigan. Once he gets that title, then he's going to jump to the NBA. But yeah, so I love to see some new blood, some new coaching blood, Alec.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Just the names you mentioned right there are names that I would like to see pick up that head coaching title. And another name I've actually been seeing too is Penny Hardaway.
That's another one.
Out of Memphis. That would be curious. I know he's done well. I remember like a couple years ago he was coaching high school and his team, like, you know, won a state title and all that. And then he jumped to his alma mater, Memphis, where they've had some success. He's brought in some high profile recruits through that program as well. So that's another name to sort of keep an eye out for if he decides he wants to make that jump to the pros. And I know his name was thrown around there with the Magic as well. So who knows, a little reunion there. Sort of once again, just that.
Wow, that'll be a
player coach relationship. Yeah, man. You know, people love Penny Hardaway and just a young squad that they had there with Cole Anthony, Markel Fultz. I mean, I know they lost Vucevic because the Bulls got him. But yeah, that it would be interesting. I think I think it's something that the Magic should look into if he's willing to take part in. You know, moving on up to the NBA. So I'm curious to see what happens there. And also with Indiana, too, just to touch on them real quick, is that Terry Stotts, you know, just leaving Portland, might head over to Indiana. Now,
And look, I know I said that I want some new blood, but I like Terry Stotts. I think he was a good coach with Portland. I think he did the best he could with the pieces he had. I think he would do good at Indiana, with Indiana. I think he would be good for them. They're a bit lower stakes than in Portland, I would say. But I like Terry Stotts. But still, I'm not sure why. I think Terry Stotts take a year off of coaching and says, you know what, let me take just a year off and then get back into coaching. Like another coach that took a couple years off before getting back into coaching was Monty Williams of the Phoenix Suns. And there are third topic, the Phoenix Suns versus the Denver Nuggets, which... Alex, your hot take is looking pretty good right about now, Alex. Why don't you remind our faithful listeners about your hot take?
All right, so just in case you forgot, my hot take when we first started the Basketball Fiends in our infancy, I was all in on the Phoenix Suns. I said they're going to make a run. They're going to be a really good team this year, and they're going to make a run in the playoffs. They came in this year as a 2 seed. They knocked out the defending champion Los Angeles Lakers in 6 games, and now they already have a 2-0 series lead on the Denver Nuggets with a 123-98 win in game 2. Man, this pick is looking real good right now, and I'm loving it.
You picked the Suns to make the Western Conference Finals. That was your hot take, and they lived up to it. Well, they haven't lived up to it yet. They're 2 wins away, but the whole season, they've definitely looked like a team who can make a run to the Western Conference Finals. Look, Chris Paul, man, he has turned back the clock. Here's some stats. Over the past 2 games, here's what point guard has done. 38 points, 26 assists, 1 turnover in 67 minutes on 58% shooting.
The epitome of efficiency.
Just clap. That's all you could do. You can just admire what he's doing. At his age, he's 36, I want to say. He's about a year younger than me. Every time I see him play well, I'm like, maybe I should go vegan. I don't know. I mean, you know, you see how it's working out for Chris Paul. What could it do for me?
Yeah, man. Just in game 2, he had 17 points, 15 assists with 0 turnovers. Yeah, 15 assists and did not turn over the ball once. So, I mean, just that veteran presence hopping on with the Suns. I mean, yeah, like I said, once the Suns got him, I was like, dude, like that's where I was fully locked in on the Suns. I mean, don't get me wrong, like the bubble impressed me. And I was like, ooh, this is a team to watch. I was like, no, once they got Chris Paul, that was the move that bumped them up to that next level. And so far, it's working out with this 2-0 series lead. And one thing with the Denver Nuggets, which is actually interesting, Mike Malone, after game 2, he was not afraid to call out this team. This quote, he said, "I thought one team wanted to be here and play with a purpose and urgency, and one team did not want to be here and play with no urgency. And that's why we got our asses kicked." Yeah, that's
pretty much what happened. You know, the way I saw it is the Suns took the nuts cojones. You know what I'm saying? Like they just went in. I'm just calling it how it is. I'm just calling it how I saw it. I didn't see no fight from the Denver Nuggets. So when Mike Malone went out there, I was like, yes, call him out because that was embarrassing. You know, Nikola Jokic just got MVP. And look, he played a good game. This is not on him. He played a good game.
Yeah, no, he's doing his job.
He's doing his job. But Michael Porter Jr., where are you, bro? You know, you won a big contract. Nobody's going to pay you after this performance. You're averaging, what, 13 points per game? I think he's shooting 35% from the field, 29% from threes. Like, we need you to score. You know, last season when they had Jamal Murray, and, you know, we should say they're still without Jamal Murray. Last season, they made it to the Western Conference Finals. They came back twice from 2-1 deficit, twice. But now,
3-1 deficits. They were 3-1 deficits.
Even better. I don't know why I said 2-1, 3-1 deficits. Now, it has to be said, Jamal Murray played a big part of that. You know, he had, I think, 2 50-point pieces in the playoffs last season. So they're definitely missing another scorer, somebody else to create, you know, and that needs to be Michael Porter Jr. But I want to talk about the Suns again, because one player that I need to give props to is DeAndre Ayton. He has stepped up his game. Jokic is working for his points. You know, we say that he's doing his thing, but he's working for his points, and he stepped up his game. He is one of three players to score at least 20 points and 10 rebounds in three straight playoff games in their first playoff appearance. Can you name the other two, Alex?
The other two.
20 points and 10 rebounds in three straight playoff games in their first playoff appearance, like the first playoff appearance in a season, you know?
It's not the center position, right? I can say whoever.
One is a center and one is a forward.
One is a center. Is Tim Duncan one of them?
Close. David Robinson.
Damn. All right. I knew it was a spur. David Robinson and a forward. Ooh. Damn. Oh, my God. Oh, this sucks.
I'm going to give you 3, 2,
LeBron. One.
Close. Nah. Not really. It was Paul Pierce.
Damn it. That wasn't close at all.
That wasn't close at all. But you were close with the Tim Duncan one. It was David Robinson. But that just goes to show you the elite company that Ayton has been in his first playoff. You know, he was highly touted coming out of college when he was drafted. And he's starting to, this season, I should say, he started to kind of, you see why he was picked such high. And these playoffs, he's definitely picked up his game. Look, granted, it helps to have Chris Paul run things, right? Like, he makes your job easier. But look, he's taking advantage of the plays that Chris Paul is setting for him, and he's taking on that responsibility. You know, like, he wants to guard Nikola Jokic, and look, he's slowing him down. Not slowing him down, I should say, but he's making it tough for Nikola.
Right, yeah, he's making the MVP work for it. Like, don't get me wrong, like, Jokic has been probably the only bright spot with the Denver Nuggets, but you know, he's had to work hard for it, and DeAndre Ayton is the reason why he's had to work for the stats that he's been getting in this series. So it's really cool to see DeAndre Ayton finally sort of come into his own as the player we sort of expected him to be, because I want to say he was the number one overall draft pick when he was drafted. So, yeah, man, it's just, man, dude, that Phoenix Suns team is just so fun to watch. I mean, him, Mikal Bridges, too.
Mikal Bridges, like, weird. We haven't even mentioned Devin Booker. Like, that's how good.
I know, right? That's all fun. Like, geez, like, we're all these names, and we're not even talking about them. That's just because this team is so damn fun, and it's like we got to talk about this guy, that guy. It's crazy, man.
Now, you know who else was in the draft where DeAndre Ayton went number one? Trae Young, and his Atlanta Hawks are currently tied 1-1 with the Philadelphia 76ers, and somebody finally found a way to contain Trae Young, and it was the Philadelphia 76ers and Ben Simmons. They sort of contained him to, I think he had, what, 15 points, I want to say, you know, made it difficult for him. And so it's interesting to see how he bounces back now, because now, you know, he has Ben Simmons draped on him, and he has to evolve from this. And look, he's proved it so far this season and in these playoffs that he can rise up. So I'm definitely looking forward to see how he rises up. And the Hawks versus the 76ers are our next topic, in case you didn't know. They're tied 1-1. And Alex, I have a question. Who on the Hawks team is going to stop Joel Embiid? In two games, he is just tearing him apart. He is making, I don't want to say mince meat of Capella, but Capella just cannot handle Joel and what Joel is bringing to the court.
I was going to say, like, I mean, it should be. You would hope it would be Clint Capella.
You would hope.
You would hope. But at this point, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, John Collins, but he would be like a, you're playing small ball there at that point. I mean, he has the athleticism to keep up. with Embiid's skill and footwork, but you know, Embiid at that point could just body him, use his strength, and get over the top down low there. So, yeah, man, you really, I think, at this point, just sort of hope that Clint Capella can get it together when they're back in Atlanta. And, you know, like you said, somehow contain Joel Embiid a little bit, because the man dropped 40 and 15 in game two. And I want to say between games one and two, he has a combined total of 79 points. Like, the dude's just pouring it in. And we're only two games in.
And look, Clint Capella, he's a good defender. He's a good post defender. That's how good Joel is. On the flip side of that, what is Philadelphia going to do? Because look, I'm sure Trae Young's going to come back in this game, and he's going to make up. You know, he's playing at home. We've seen crowds have powered, you know, some of these teams that are playing with more of a fuller crowd. And, you know, Trae Young loves a crowd, as we saw at Madison Square Garden. So he's just going to feed on that, and they're going to find a way. So I think this is a pivotal game three. Whoever wins this game obviously controls the series. But I think more so than that, the momentum. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Philly steals this game three.
And actually, one thing I want to point out, which I found interesting, I was sort of reading up on the Hawks, and one thing they've actually been struggling in this series so far is in the fourth quarter. I don't know if you remember that game one towards the end. You know, Philly kind of scared Atlanta a little bit. They had that steal on the inbounds play. Ben Simmons scored, and all of a sudden it became like a one-possession game. And don't get me wrong, like, Atlanta, you know, came out and won that game, but I mean, throughout that fourth quarter, you saw Philly sort of, you know, claw their way back into that game. And even at the last minute, when it looked like, hey, all off, Atlanta had to do was inbound the ball and get fouled, and that was it. They turned the ball over, and, you know, Philly just makes it a game all of a sudden, just like that. So I'm curious to see if the Hawks can sort of, once again, just get it together in the fourth quarter and close out games. Because I want to say their net rating in the fourth quarter in game two was -48.3. Like, that's not good. Like, that's bad. Like, that's really, really bad. And when you talk about, you know, momentum and basically this pivotal game three, you know, trying to swipe momentum on your side to go into game four, you know, the Hawks really need to close this thing out in the fourth quarter, because they, you know, they've struggled to do that, not only in the playoffs, but just in the regular season.
Yeah, and I think that's where you want Trae Young to have the ball. You know, he's your playmaker, he's your scorer, he's your go-to guy. So when you need a bucket, you need to draw a play for Trae Young. That's what Nate really needs to do. Or, you know, just have, you know, Trae go one-on-one and just see whether he can create an open shot for somebody, or just, you know, pull up for a three or drive it in. But I would say, you know, from here on out for the Hawks, this is all gravy. You know, you didn't even expect they were going to make the playoffs entering this season. You know, they fire a coach midway, which that's another coach that name I've been hearing, Lloyd Pierce, which surprises me, because I'm like, wait, you mean to tell me Lloyd Pierce, the guy that was coaching the Hawks, got fired? Now the Hawks brought in Nate McMillan, and he made him a second round playoff appearance. So Lloyd Pierce is in contention for some.
Yeah. And Nate McMillan still has the interim tag too.
He still has the interim tag. Look, if the Hawks don't sign him up, some other team's just going to sign him up as soon as the season is over. But no, I bring up Lloyd Pierce to say, once again, we need new blood. You know, if Lloyd Pierce kind of flamed out with the Hawks, give him a couple years off, he can get better, you know, bring him some new blood. So I don't want to hear his name. No disrespect to Lloyd Pierce, right? Just want to see some new people get opportunities. But back on the Hawks, no, I think in the fourth quarter, they just got to, you know, do what has got them there to that point. Now, granted, it's interesting to say, but Philadelphia has found a better way to defend the Hawks, which I thought the Knicks were going to be able to do that, because, you know, Tom Thibodeau, this is his specialty, defense, and they just could not find a way to corral the Hawks and corral Trae Young. Philadelphia 76ers have done it. Now, could it be because they have bigger defenders? Ben Simmons, 6'9". That's a bigger person you have to, you know, try and fake, and, you know, maybe the guards that are typically guarding you, it's a little easier for Trae Young to shake them off as opposed to somebody bigger, because you do have length to deal with. But yeah, so it's been a fun series so far, two games in. We've seen a lot of scoring, so I think that's the way it's going to keep going.
Absolutely, man. And yeah, I mean, I think Trae Young will bounce back. I mean, I know the assignment of having to get past Ben Simmons is a tough one, you know, as talented as Trae Young is, that's it's definitely an issue when you're so used to facing off guys that are your size to all of a sudden a damn near 10-footer who can keep up with you. It's just draped all on you. So, but once again, Trae Young, he'll be all right. I underestimated him too much. So at this point, I'm just like, he'll be all
right,
man.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, I was like, nah, he'll do it. He'll do it. He's got it. He's Trae Young.
That sort of wraps up this episode, because that pretty much was our last topic.
That was our last topic. And that is my last topic until 2 weeks, because something you guys don't know is I'll be off for the next episode. So it'll be the first episode where Alex and I aren't hosting. Well, Alex will be here, but I just won't be co-hosting that episode. So it's going to be weird not doing it. I've gotten into a schedule, you know, every week, record podcast. So, but it's, you know, I'm taking a vacation. So first vacation in a long, long time.
A well-deserved vacation.
A well-deserved vacation, I guess you can say. More so for my wife than me. I know she's actually been working more than me. So it's a one more deserved vacation for Giselle. But I'm looking to see. I'm looking forward to see how the next episode comes out that I won't be featuring. It'll probably be the best episode yet. Watch.
Yeah, we'll see. But don't worry. I'll hold it down. We're going to have a guest on. So, you know, we got one half of the Fiends that'll be holding it down.
And it's a surprise guest. It could be somebody famous. It could be somebody non-famous. It's just a surprise, you know?
Yeah, man, you'll just have to watch out. So
you have to tune in.
We'll see. Well, wait, where are you going? Where are you going, actually, for vacation?
Oh, I'm going for a couple of days to Las Vegas.
Ooh, Vegas.
Yeah, which I'm not a big Las Vegas fan, actually. It's just, you know, tickets were cheap. My, you know, Giselle loves Las Vegas. So I'm like, let's do it. And, you know, it's always fun to go and people watch. And I'm going to go eat some good food. And who knows, maybe I'll hit the lottery and,
you know, yeah, man.
Hit the jackpot, I guess, instead of lottery.
A lot of dreams are made.
And broken.
More broken.
Yeah, that
even more
go.
Broken.
There you go.
So, well, you're not going to the Bellagio, right?
No.
Okay, good.
Why?
Good.
Why shouldn't I go to the Bellagio?
I got a little beef with the Bellagio.
Oh,
that's a story
okay.
for another time.
Oh, we'll save that. Yeah, we'll save that story for another time. All right. Well, what are your plans for this weekend, Alex? Because, you know, I think I told you my plans. I'm turning 1 year older tomorrow. So what are your plans for the weekend?
Right. Got a baby shower to go to. So gonna just meet up with some family that I haven't seen in a bit. You know, nice. Celebrate the arrival of a new life.
New life.
Coming into the family. So it's a cousin. So okay. Cousin I haven't seen in a bit. But yeah, pretty much yeah. Just baby shower and I guess, you know, chilling for the most part.
Watching some basketball games, playoff basketball games.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for you people. Join next week so you can hear Alex and the mystery guest talk about basketball. They'll update you on all the basketball games from here to next week. There's going to be a lot to talk about, I feel. I'm going to have FOMO for sure, Alex. I'm for sure going to have FOMO.
Yeah, man. Ooh, FOMO. Man, I should probably use FOMO more. I don't use that a whole lot.
That's actually the first time I think I've dropped it in a sentence, FOMO. I feel so young. So vibrant.
Yeah. Hey, man, I don't use it, so that's telling you something.
And you're young. I think we should remind people. So I'm turning 38 tomorrow. Alex, you are 22 currently, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm 22.
Such an age difference. There's like a teenager in between us. Age difference.
I know, right? That's weird.
That is weird. Oh, my God. All right. With enough about us rambling on, people. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Basketball Fiends. Don't forget to subscribe. See ya.
Deuces.